This podcast contains swearing and occasional disturbing content.
I don't need to live in this physical realm. I walk around in the physical realm. In the spiritual world is where I live. I exist in places you never even dreamed of. Strange.
Hello and welcome to the High Strangers Podcast, episode 77.
Yes.
My name is Gav.
My name's Sarah.
Welcome. Hope everybody's safe, happy, healthy, horny in the world.
Spooky.
Spooky. Scary.
Yep.
Strange.
Yep.
Weird.
Yes. Be your weirdest self.
And have you been spelunking since our last episode? Has anybody spelunked anywhere? Let us know. Geographical locations of your spelunking expeditions.
Yes. And photos.
That was a crazy one, that one. I still even went on as a bit of a little cave hole of YouTube, I should say, after that. I went and watched a couple more bits and bobs. Yeah, because it's just, oh my God, it's just so terrifying.
It is so scary.
It is. So I hope you listened to that one last time.
Yeah.
Welcome, everybody. Yeah. Sarah.
Hello.
Happy, well, and well.
Yes,
I forgot the word and. Happy well. Maybe I should do that and we could just work out what I'm saying and I'll just miss every other word or something.
Could do.
No. Yes, today we're back into serial killer.
Well.
Is it serial killer?
Yeah, there is one.
One kill.
There's one serial killer.
Right.
And there's one kidnap.
Of course. Abduction. Yes.
So it's just a bit of a strange story. So we're here for like the general story today.
Okay.
Because it's such a weird one.
I don't really know about this story. And how do you know of it?
It's just one of those things that I know about. I think I heard it on, might have been on that Scary Mysteries channel on YouTube. And I was like, that's a really fucked up story. I need to get in deeper to this
and look into it and figure it out.
Yeah, but I think there is a documentary you can watch. I'm pretty sure it's on Prime. I think it's called Captive Audience.
Right.
And that's a four-part documentary on this, I think. And there's another one called I Know My Name Is Stephen, but I don't think it's on Amazon or anything like that.
Okay, cool. So an interesting person to get into and delve into the beginnings, etc.
Well, yeah. Well, the story is, you know, the story of the family, really.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm interested today into finding out about this character. Something we can really get into his mind, you think?
Well, yeah. I suppose we could. I mean, I don't know if because it's one brother who was abducted. And then his older brother, who became a serial killer. So we're going to go through both stories.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah, so, you know.
Just like the weird coincidence.
You can maybe see, or you could maybe say, like, the abduction had something to do with forming the older brother. But at the same time, I don't really think so. You know, obviously we're going to get onto it. But you'll see he is diagnosed as autistic at an early age, which doesn't by any means mean that you're a murderer. But it will mean that he's got a different mindset to other people, you know, and then obviously the trauma of his brother being kidnapped. But he does say that he has had those fantasies since he was quite young to do that kind of thing, so.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so it's just, as the story develops, you know, it's kind of one of those.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
All right, well, please. My seatbelt is clicked.
Okay.
My chair is resigned back to the position I wanted in, and my gloves are on the wheel with my hands in the gloves.
Okay. I'm not sure what's going on Engine's there, on. But still. I didn't know we were in the car.
No, I don't know, but it just flowed.
Okay.
So we're all sitting in the car, everybody. Everyone's
in the car. Whose car are we in, mine or yours?
I don't know, but it's a squashed car.
Yours is a bit bigger than mine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so today we're going to be discussing the tragic and bizarre story of brothers Stephen and Carey Stainer. Stephen was abducted by a known paedophile, Kenneth Parnell, at age 7, and in later years, Carey would go on to become the Yosemite Park Killer, and he would be convicted of the murders of 4 women. So Stephen Stainer was the third of five children, and he had two younger sisters, an older sister and his older brother Carey. He was born in 1965 to parents Kay and Dale Stainer in Merced, California.
So one of five?
Yep. So he's got quite a big family.
Okay.
By all accounts, the family dynamic was generally normal. The family followed the Mormon religion. Delbert served in the army from 1953 to 1957, and he worked in sawmills throughout California before working in canning factories, finally retiring in 1995. He and Kay married in 1960. On the afternoon of December the 4th, 1972, Stephen was walking home from school when he was approached by a man named Irvin Murphy. Murphy worked at Yosemite National Park with another man named Kenneth Parnell, 41, who was a known paedophile. Parnell had passed himself off as a minister to Murphy, who was described by those who knew him as trusting, naive and simple-minded, and he had enlisted him into helping abduct a young boy so that Parnell could, quote, raise him in a religious-type deal, as Murphy later said.
All right, so we've got this this one kid to talk about. He's a brothers and sisters, one of five. Normal sort of background. Dad's, well, we don't know mum totally, but it's not like...
No, she's kind of like a homemaker, you know, they're quite a religious family.
Right.
He's
just getting
got a good work ethic and stuff, so...
Yeah, like you're saying, he was in the army for 4 years and then came out and, like, working his ass off.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just kind of normal background, probably loved, I expect.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And just happens to be one day... What age is he, sorry?
When seven.
He's seven, and he's walking from where?
School.
Okay, fine. And he's approached by someone who's been coerced into helping, because this person seems to be a bit less intelligent. So
yeah.
They've been coerced into, oh, can you help me get a child so I can raise them the right way?
And yeah.
Okay. But yeah, if this person's, really that easy to go ahead and not ask questions.
I think they're vulnerable, and I think Parnell does that quite a bit throughout the story, you know, to kind of get them, you know, to help him do stuff.
It happens to be every one of these horrible humans in life that either domestic abusers, killers, always is looking for the vulnerable. They're never going for the ones who's strong. I want to make it a challenge.
Yeah,
look, paedophiles, they don't try and make it challenging.
They don't want that, do they? They don't want the challenge.
And that's what always, the things that paedophiles think, always just makes me think, like, because they think, oh, I'm doing this because that's a power thing. You go, like, over a child.
Yeah.
So you're tricking yourself into thinking you're powerful when you're just doing something terribly awful. That's one thing I never really get with paedophiles, do you know what I mean? That whole...
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not what we're talking about. Well, I suppose
it is what we're talking about.
But, yeah.
I know what you mean.
The whole power thing is always going for vulnerable people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose they wouldn't get away with it then. We we just don't know about it. It might have been people being like, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be a pedo, but I'm going to be a challenged pedo.
Oh my God.
I'm going to go for like the really big children. Might be harder to tackle.
Oh, the ones that fight back.
And then we never find out about them because they give up. We go, I'm going to give up on that. I just need to go rumble. It's terrible idea. Fucking pedos.
Okay. So, Parnell was a former motel clerk who had already been convicted of molesting an 8-year-old boy in Bakersfield, California, in 1952.
As far as I know, steroid capital of America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got some friends in Bakersfield.
Oh, how funny. But he only served 3 years in prison for that offence. Murphy was passing out religious pamphlets to boys walking home from school, and when he spotted Stephen, he claimed to be a church representative looking for donations, and he asked Stephen if he thought his mother would like to make a donation. Stephen replied that he was sure she would and that he'd be happy to take Murphy back to his house to ask. Parnell pulled up to the pair in a white Buick and Stephen climbed in. Parnell drove Stephen to a cabin in a nearby community named Cathy's Valley, and unknown to Stephen, the cabin was located only several hundred feet from his maternal grandfather's house. Parnell told Stephen that he'd spoken to his parents and it was okay for him to stay the night, and he began to molest him. I'm not going to be going into that. I should have put a warning at the beginning of this. There will be me saying that a couple of times, but I'm not going to go into it because we're kind of here for the story, you know.
No. So hang on, let's set this up. So he's got this guy. This guy's gone along. He's said to this kid, whatever he said to this kid, lied to this kid.
Yeah.
To go get into this car. The dude's come along in this car and they've both got in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone off and he said to the guy who he coerced, said, don't worry about it, talk to the parents, he's fine, he's going to stay with me. What happens to, where's that guy now?
What guy?
The guy who managed to cohere, was coerced into...
The guy who got Stephen in the car in the first place. Guy? Okay, I'm assuming he's probably still with him, or maybe he's gone to his house.
Well, that was what I was wondering, because when you said Dennis went in, did whatever he did to the child, I wonder where that character was then. Because obviously he's been duped into this, so I imagine what would his reaction be if he then saw that? I'm sure he would be like, that's not correct, I know it's not right what you're doing.
Well, I don't know how much critical thinking has he got if he's easily led and vulnerable. Mm. You know, he might not have the thinking to kind of connect the two, and he might think, well, you know, he's saying he's a minister, maybe he knows better than me.
I guess so.
You know, won't speak out against it.
Probably might do. All right, so wherever this character is, let's pretend he's gone. He's not there for ease of not knowing, because we don't know, you know, otherwise we're going into another thing, like I was saying, wondering what his reaction would be. But okay, fine. So, at this place, and that has happened.
Yep. After a week of Stephen asking to go home, Parnell told him that he'd gone to court and got custody of him, as his parents couldn't afford to keep so many children. Parnell began calling Stephen Dennis Gregory Parnell, keeping Stephen's original middle name and his date of birth when he enrolled him in various schools over the coming years.
What the fuck? Poor kid.
Yep.
Like, so my mum and dad don't want me. Like,
yeah.
What? And I'm just not going to see him anymore. And that's it. And now you're just going to be only. But then you do these things to me all the time.
Yeah.
That is going to screw...
Yeah, it's bad, isn't
a
it?
...a human up.
Yeah.
That's their beginnings.
Yeah.
That's
7 years old.
They're minded, because obviously I've got, you know, we've both had children, so that age. Yeah. There's a lot of, like, you're still taking in a lot of what the world is.
Yeah, I think you're really inquisitive at that kind of age, and you are starting to learn how the world works and how people work as well.
And this
you know?
Is what you're finding out, and all of a sudden what you thought was all nice now. So this has happened, though. What's going on with the parents, though? Obviously, they've put a missing report in.
Yeah, they put a missing report in, but you know, searches for him.
But he's only... where is he? Obviously, he doesn't stay at a place which is just hundreds of feet from his paternal granddad's home for years.
Yeah, no, they move around.
Yeah, you could do that. It'd be too obvious, be easy found or seen.
They move around, but I think it's always fairly close within his original home, you know.
It's just that's a crazy thing, though. It's kind of like... I guess what it is, what you do with these people, almost like that kind of Stockholm syndrome sort of thing. Because after a while, if you're trusting this kid just to go to school and just talk to the other kids, sure, at some point, well, what about your mum and dad? He must then be trained.
Conditions him, I suppose. And
into saying what needs to be said.
Doesn't really speak about it, you know. Everyone just thinks it's a dad and a son.
Oh, fucking hell. Shit.
Okay. Even though missing flyers circulated all over the area, including some of the schools that Stephen attended, no one ever came forward to say that they recognised him. Parnell passed himself off as Stephen's father, and the two moved frequently around California, with Parnell taking a number of menial jobs and allowing Stephen to do as he pleased, including drinking at a young age. Some of Parnell's work required him to travel, and Stephen was left unguarded at times. He later admitted that he could have used these times to escape, but he didn't know how to get help. So that kind of answers your question as well, you know, and maybe partly he was kind of scared, you know. Stephen's classmates had no idea of his background, and he made no mention of it, aside from one previous girlfriend whom Stephen told, "I wish I could go home." When she said, "But you only live over there, you can go home any time you want," he said, "No, my real home." But he never mentioned it to anyone else. She said at the time she had no idea what he meant, but obviously that became clear after he got discovered. One of his previous teachers said that she could tell there was something about him from the way that he carried himself.
Bless him.
Yeah. For a period of 18 months, a woman named Barbara Mathias lived with the two of them. According to Stephen, Mathias, along with Parnell, raped him on 10 different occasions when he was age 9.
Fucking What the fuck?
In 1975, on Parnell's instruction, Matthias tried to lure another young boy into Parnell's car, though the attempt was thankfully unsuccessful. Matthias went on to later claim that she was unaware that Stephen had been abducted.
But she is fine for just raping
the
kid.
Yeah, she was fine with everything else.
Oh, well, I didn't know she was abducted. I thought it was just a normal rapey job.
Yeah, even though she tried to abduct the other kid as well.
Stupid fucking cow.
As Stephen began to enter puberty, Parnell began to look for a younger child and had enlisted Stephen to help kidnap them on a number of occasions. They were, however, all unsuccessful, with Stephen later admitting that he had sabotaged them all. On February the 14th, 1980, Parnell and a teenage friend of Stephen's, Randall Poorman, abducted 5-year-old Timmy White from Ukiah. Stephen didn't want what happened to him to happen to Timmy, so he sabotaged every attempt Parnell made to molest him, and after 2 weeks, Stephen made a decision to get Timmy home. On March the 1st, 1980, while Parnell was out on a night security job, Stephen took Timmy and left, hitchhiking the 40 miles into Ukiah.
Wow.
Timmy couldn't remember where his house was, so Stephen took him to the police station and told him to go inside and tell them who he was.
But he didn't go as well.
Yeah, he wasn't going to. But Timmy was afraid and didn't want Stephen to leave him. He began crying and a policeman came out to see what was happening. On the 2nd of March, Parnell was arrested on suspicion of abducting both boys, and Stephen and Timmy were reunited with their families.
So imagine, though, so the policeman's come out, so what's wrong? Imagine that conversation. I'd like to have known, actually, to have seen, or heard, not seen, but you know what I mean, a transcript of it or whatever, how that actually went ahead, and then him sort of going, we're assuming that he then went, okay, and then just...
Yeah.
You know, the policeman hopefully going, seeing something obviously more to do with just this. Like, what do you mean he's coming from where, what he's been done? So, who are you? And what is your involvement? And, I was, what you were done. And like, then it just all coming out.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, what a revelation.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Really, him,
because
he's just been so conditioned into being like, no, you go in, I want to rescue you because I don't want what happened to me. What an amazing character to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go back to it.
Yeah,
because they're conditioned. Fuck. All right. Okay. So maybe he
decided that he was going to go back to keep doing that. You know, maybe to stop every time that guy abducted another kid, or to stop him from abducting the kid in the first place. You know, or if he abducted the child, to maybe keep doing that all the time and like escaping with them, getting them back to their family.
I don't think he's thought that. No, I don't think that he's probably living day by day, not knowing what the fuck. I'd have thought in a sort of way. But I wouldn't have thought that. I just think probably conditioned into not. And then hopefully at one point when he's sitting inside the room, it's like, come back, come in here, I need to talk about it. Please say, at one point it just all of a sudden clicks and he's like, of course, what am I doing?
Yeah.
This guy is a fucking da 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 da. This address, this is him, this is where I am, da da da. Right, that's really exciting. So now the police now are onto him and this is where
they've arrested him.
Oh, fine.
Okay, so they're reunited with their families and Parnell's arrested the next day.
Oh, imagine the parents just like, where have you been? What the hell? So how many years has this been?
7 years it was.
7 years?
Yeah, he was gone.
Imagine that, having your child come back.
Yeah.
And they're like 14, 15. Yeah. And you've like missed that whole... He had him when he was a teenager though, so he's really moody.
Yeah. His mother Kay said, we expected him to come back. We had hope, faith and kept busy. His father Del said, I never stopped looking. Every time I saw a crowd on TV or a picture of a lot of people in a magazine,
of course,
I always looked closely, hoping to see Stephen.
Oh, imagine that every time.
Yeah.
And then just every time the picture goes, you go, no one there. I'll look again another picture or another time.
According to an article in Time magazine later in March with Stephen, he hadn't really spoken about what had happened to him, insisting to police that he, quote, wasn't mistreated. And according to police notes, Stainer seemed to have a fondness for Parnell and was defensive when talking about him, though he did say he had no desire to see him again. In a TV interview, Stephen said it was great to be back, but his siblings had changed a lot. He returned to school where he was a constant source of curiosity and some teased him about being molested. His sister Corey said, quote, he got on with his life, but he was pretty messed up and he never got any counselling. My dad said he didn't need any.
It's old school though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's going to be like, what, 83, 84?
Yeah, around that time, yeah. His mother Kay said he came back different, very different, and we had a rough time getting used to having him home. Good Morning America interviewed Stephen in 1983. He described his first year back as kind of hectic. And for 7 years, he said, for 7 years I've been supposedly an only child and now I have to compete with four others.
To be fair, he's not going to be a child for much longer. Only a few years, so he's an adult. But yeah. did go by quick.
In 1984, he told Newsweek, quote, I returned almost a grown man, and yet my parents saw me at first as their seven-year-old still.
Of course.
After they stopped trying to teach me the fundamentals all over again, it got better. But why doesn't my dad hug me anymore? I guess 7 years changed him too. Everything has changed.
Oh.
Sometimes I blame myself. I don't know sometimes if I should have come home. Would I have been better off if I didn't?
Oh, that's sad, isn't it?
Yeah. In 1981, Parnell was tried and convicted of kidnapping Timmy and Stephen in two separate trials, with Timmy, who was then aged six, testifying at the trial.
I wonder if they stayed in contact.
Well, you have to wait and see what happens, because there's still more to the story yet.
Okay.
He was sentenced to 7 years. It's not good. It's not a good more to the story. He was sentenced to 7 years, but was paroled after serving five. For kidnapping both of them. 5 years. It's mental. Parnell was not charged with the numerous sexual assaults on Stephen due to the statute of limitations, and some were committed outside the jurisdiction of the Merced County prosecutor.
It's fucking stupid. Do you know what I mean?
I know, but why just let him out in 5 years as well?
As well?
He's a known paedophile. Like, he's got
It's going to happen again.
Ridiculous. Murphy and Poorman were convicted of lesser charges and both claimed they knew nothing of the sexual assaults on Stephen. Barbara Mathias was not arrested. Stephen had a hard time adjusting to family and normal life and began to drink heavily. Eventually he was kicked out of the family home and his relationship with his father remained strained. In 1985, Stephen married 17-year-old Jodie Edmondson, with whom he had two children. He also worked with child abduction groups, spoke to children about personal safety, and gave interviews about his kidnapping.
Who's that? That's
Stephen.
Stephen did. Oh,
yeah.
That's quite good, though.
Yeah.
But he's going to drink in relationships. Yeah, going. Yeah. If you're not going to get the kid counselling, he's going to bottle it up.
Yeah.
With drink.
Yeah, it needs some therapy.
And yeah.
He also joined the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. On September 16th, 1989, Stephen was involved in a fatal vehicle collision.
Oh, my God.
Whoop. Dropping notes. When his motorcycle collided with a car after he left work at a local pizza place. The driver of the car left the scene of the accident, but was later identified by witnesses, and he was sentenced to 3 months in prison for hit and run. What is going on with these sentences?
I don't know. It was a Reagan era, that was.
Fucking ridiculous.
Was that like, we don't have enough room in the jails?
I don't know, maybe.
Do you know
what
I mean?
Could be, I suppose, yeah.
I don't know.
At 500 people attended Stephen's funeral, and Timmy White, who was 14 at the time, was a pallbearer.
What? Not a very great life for that kid.
No.
He was all right until he went for that walk.
Yeah. Well, coming home from school wasn't even a fucking, like, just a decision to go for a walk, was it?
But why did... I don't know. Is seven's quite young for coming back from school? How far has he got to come back from school? But they get then against 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
That shit happened.
70s, isn't it? So.
And then why... I suppose because he's seven. But then again, I'm trying to think of Elijah seven, what he'd have done. I'm very good with my kids. You know, someone comes along and says...
I don't think my two would have got in a car.
So if someone's got some puppies in their car, you know, like...
Yeah.
I don't think my two would have got
in a car at seven.
Yeah, I think they'd like to know better. But then again, maybe it's a different time than, but you say that now of 2024, different time than you, maybe that wasn't pushed into kids' minds so much.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
All right.
So, yeah, so that's him gone.
Yeah.
Out of the picture.
Yeah.
So we've got Timmy still, what happens to him, and we've got this kid's older brother, who's Stephen's older brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so in 2003, Parnell was, which is the guy who abducted him, Parnell was arrested again in connection with an attempted kidnapping when he tried to get his caretaker to buy a four-year-old boy for him in Berkeley, California.
Boy?
Yep.
Here's 20 quid. Can you go
and
get me a boy?
And that's 2003, so imagine how old this guy is now. Or then, do you know what I mean?
And that's what, in 2003? 2003. Imagine that, though. I thought you wanted me to go buy you some milk and some sugar. What do you mean, a kid? Where'd you get a kid from? Kids R Us?
I'm sure there's places. I'm sure there's people selling their children for drugs at some point, you know.
Yeah, okay. So that's just crazy, though. Why can't he just go and do it?
Because he's fucking ancient by now, I should think.
Oh, buy me a child.
A year later, he was sentenced to life in prison under the three strikes rule, and prosecutor Tim Wellman said, quote, he's been a danger to children his entire life.
Three strikes? Why not one strike?
I know.
Why?
Just let him get away with an extra two fucking cases of abduction and molestation. Yeah, great.
If you're raping children again, maybe another time we might let that slip as well. But then after that, no more children raping. It's not one.
Parnell died in 2008 at the age of 76 of natural causes in the state prison hospital at Vacaville.
Damn.
I know.
Should have died of bum rot.
Yeah, definitely. Timmy White went on to marry and have two children and became sheriff's deputy in Los Angeles in 2005.
That's pretty cool.
He tragically died of a pulmonary embolism in 2010, aged 35.
Oh. That's better than I thought you were going to say.
Okay.
I thought he was going to turn into a molester himself.
Oh,
and
okay.
And then you're like,
no, he
had
didn't
a parent,
do too
had children.
Badly.
I was like, oh no, don't say he's going to molest his children because.
Yeah.
Because,
but
he didn't
get that. You know, he was only with that guy for like 2 weeks.
So he died at 35.
Yeah.
And how old did Stephen die? What age was Stephen when he died?
I think he was like early 20s.
Probably,
if I remember rightly. 23, 24.
Yeah, he didn't have good hands, both those. Okay. Right. Let's go on to Stephen's older brother.
Okay, so next one. Cary Stainer, also known as the Yosemite Park Killer.
So, he's gone, obviously, when these happened, and his brother. So, this guy, Cary, you say Cary?
Cary.
He's older or younger than Stephen? He's older than Stephen. And what are the other siblings?
They're all younger, I think.
All younger.
All younger than him.
So, how much older than Stephen is he? Do we know? I'm just wondering how old he was when Stephen was abducted and that whole family traumatic thing happened.
Yeah, I think he was about... When Stephen was abducted,
9,
I'm
10.
Pretty sure... No, he was a bit older than that.
Oh, 11, 12.
Because Stephen was 7. I think he was maybe about 15.
That's quite the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Right,
well,
that changes.
Yeah, because there's him, and then I think there's a sister as well between him and Stephen.
Yeah.
Then there's another two after Stephen.
That changed it for me a little bit, because I thought maybe he was maybe, you know,
he was
9 or 10.
If it makes it easier, it's 20. He was 27 at the time that Stephen died in the 80s. So this is going to take place around 1999. So he's going to be about mid 30s, late 30s at this time when he does his deeds.
But I mean, I just wanted to. Find out how old he was when these events happened, because it would have been such a traumatic thing for the whole family.
Yeah.
Even though the sister and brother's like, where's our brother?
Yeah.
Like, so I just want to know how that plays in, because you say not maybe a connection, but it must be. That's not.
I'm sure it would probably have something to do with it, but we'll go on to see, you know, he'll give a bit of an explanation about it later as well. So, you know, we've got some kind of.
I was wondering if he looks at it and thinks, oh, abducting is actually okay, or it's a thing which happens in the world, or it's an open eye-opener for him or something.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Okay, we can speculate
break it down
on that in a bit.
Indeed.
Okay, so Stainer is an American serial killer and Stephen's older brother. He was convicted of the murders of four women between February and July 1999. Stainer was born in 1961, and when he was 3 years old, he was diagnosed with trichotillomania, which is obsessive hair pulling, and was put on medication, though the condition would continue to affect him through his high school years.
You pull your hair out.
And usually he wore a baseball cap, yeah. Just obsessively pull your hair out all the time.
So the pain of that feeling...
I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Although it was believed that his brother's abduction was the main contribution to Stainer's criminal behaviour, after his arrest, Stainer told police that he had fantasised about abducting and murdering women since he was 7 years old. His teachers at high school noted that he was highly intelligent, and he was the cartoonist for the high school newspaper, which won him the title of most creative student. While his sister's friend was staying at their house, he exposed himself to her, but it wasn't reported to the police.
Who was staying at his house?
His sister's friend.
And how old was he?
I don't know when that was.
He showed her his willy, like teenage, like falling around.
I'm going to say he's probably 20. She was born in 61.
Sorry, I thought it was like a 12-year-old type.
No, I think it's probably a bit older than that.
I thought it might have been like, you know.
No, I think he's older.
I don't know.
No, I think he's over 18.
Right.
At that point. After graduating, Stainer worked as a window installer at a glass company, which is where he allegedly developed a fantasy about ramming a truck into the workplace, killing everyone there and setting the place on fire. In 1991, Stainer tried to gas himself to death with carbon monoxide. In 1995, he was admitted to a mental institution after claiming to have had a nervous breakdown and was released after receiving treatment. He was also arrested for possession of marijuana and methamphetamines, although these charges were eventually dropped. In 1997, Stainer was hired as a handyman at the Cedar Lodge Motel in El Porto, California, just outside the entrance to Yosemite National Park, and it was here that he would find his victims. So on March the 18th, 1999, Stainer's first two victims were found. They were 42-year-old Carol Sund and her 16-year-old Argentine exchange student Silvina Peloso, who was staying with the Sunds. Their bodies were found in the trunk of Sund's Pontiac rental car, which had been set on fire. The bodies were burned beyond recognition and had to be identified by dental records. Sund had been strangled with a rope and shot, and Peloso had been raped and shot. Sund's daughter, 15-year-old Juliana, was, however, still missing. A week later, a note was sent to the police with a hand-drawn map indicating the location of a third body. The top of the note read, quote, "We had fun with this one." Investigators went to the location where they found Juliana's remains. She had been raped and had her throat cut. Detectives began interviewing employees at the Cedar Lodge Motel where the three victims had been staying. One of those employees was Carey Stainer, but he wasn't considered a suspect at that point as he had no previous convictions and didn't seem nervous during interview.
What's he do at the hotel?
Handyman.
So he's got keys for all the places.
He's got keys, yeah, he's got a reason to be places where you wouldn't think that he would be, you know, he's got a reason to be peeping through your window, I suppose.
So he's
or an
had
excuse,
these,
not a reason.
He's had these fantasies since he's seven anyway, so before his brother was abducted, he's been having these fantasies. Okay. So it's got to a point in his life where he thinks he can go ahead and do this now. And it's always opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always like they're ready, they've decided, and then the opportunity arises. Because it doesn't seem like it's planned.
Well, as we'll
see... If he's doing it in his workplace...
No, he is... he was planning to do something else. We'll go on to see what his idea was, but he got stopped from doing that for a reason. So he found them, they were like, you know, the next best
option. Because they said earlier he's very intelligent. So I was just wondering why he's been so foolishly sloppy with killing people in his work who have stayed at where he works.
Yeah, but he has been diagnosed as autistic, so I don't think the two...
Not, Okay.
The two kind of running track.
So he's not realising that.
I mean,
that
he might be highly intelligent, but he might not make that connection in other areas.
Yeah, totally. All right, so, and yeah, he's not doing too well. But they've figured that he's not even. Nah, he won't. He's not a killer.
Yeah, he's not a suspect.
But it's like a murder mystery there. It's all going around the hotel going, let's talk to the manager now. Where were you on the night of the deaths?
Okay, on July the 22nd, 1999, the decapitated body of 26-year-old Yosemite Institute employee Joey Armstrong was found. Eyewitnesses said they saw a 1972 Blue International Scout vehicle parked outside the cabin where Joey was staying the day prior. Detectives traced this vehicle to Stainer, which led to him becoming the prime suspect.
So, three women have been first of all killed, and yeah, he's raped just the one, the last one, which
no,
he said
raped,
that
he raped
all of them?
The other one. He raped the exchange student as well.
So, three people were good, but two and he raped.
Yeah.
He didn't rape the other lady?
No.
Why?
Don't know.
Surprised that to get out of there to
no, I think it was only his intention to ever rape the two girls anyway.
Okay, because I was wondering why he's now gone on to kill another man, so I was wondering, did this
it's
man...
It's not a man, it's a lady.
What, the next one?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry! Fine, carry on then.
Okay. FBI agents found Stainer staying at the Laguna del Sol nudist resort, where he was arrested and taken in for questioning.
Have you got anything on you? As you can see,
yeah.
I have nothing in my pockets. I'm not wearing pockets.
During interrogation, Stainer shocked the agents when he not only confessed to the murder and decapitation of Joey Armstrong, but also to the Sund and Palosso murders and the sending of the map to Julie Sund's body. He told detectives that he had a persistent fantasy that he wanted to rape and murder two children. On the night of February the 14th, he had gone to his girlfriend's house with the intention of killing her and raping and murdering her two young daughters. But she had visitors and he had no opportunity, so he left.
That was his plan.
That was his plan.
Again, the autism kicking in there, because that's not, again, who's the first person that they're going to look at? It's the boyfriend straight away. Then they're going to go, right, it's him.
Yeah.
So he would have got caught straight away from that. So, yeah, the bigger picture's not there, or he just hasn't, just can't think of that bigger picture, just doesn't work in his mind.
Mm-mm.
So, but his fantasy to rape children and kill.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Where's this come from as a child, though? This has been building up for a while. Was a seed that has been growing.
Yeah, well, he said he's been fantasising about it since he was young. So.
Where do you think that came from, though?
I don't know. I think he's just got a broken brain.
Yeah, but we always see different reasons for these things, don't we?
Yeah, like, but like sometimes doesn't have to be a reason, does that? Why does he need a head trauma when he's autistic?
Mm.
You know, we don't know whereabouts on the spectrum he was or how autistic he was or like...
How's my words?
You know.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't work like normal, quote, normal people.
How the mind generally would work.
It could go there.
Yeah, okay.
He went back to the Cedar Lodge and spotted Carol Sund and the two girls. Following his arrest, Stainer was suspected of being responsible for other homicides and disappearances. 28-year-old Patricia Dahlstrom last contacted family in September 1982 after relocating to Merced, California from Washington State.
So you say 19 after two?
She had joined a religious following but left after the leader was found guilty of a series of sexual assaults. Hicks was last seen by her roommate taking public transport to the Yosemite National Park. A severed arm and hand were recovered from the park on June the 28th, 1983, and by 1988, a skull was also discovered near the original scene. In April 2021, the remains were identified as those of Hicks. Stainer was known to be acquainted with the cult leader at the time of his trial, and it is thought that he killed Hicks in retaliation for testimony she gave against him in court. On December 26, 1990, Stainer's paternal uncle, 42-year-old Jesse Stainer, with whom Carey lived in Merced, was shot to death in his house with his own shotgun. The murder was never solved and Stainer became a suspect after his arrest. Carey later claimed that his uncle began molesting him at around age 11. So that might have something to do with it, if that's a thing.
It's all a bit much, this whole family thing that's going on there, the whole dynamic of everything that's been
going
on.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and not really some things being the cause of others, like the kid just being kidnapped. There's nothing, there's nothing.
Yeah.
The parents were the paedophile uncle. It just happened, but it's just a bit like, blimey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but the dad and mum of this family were like, fuck.
Yeah. So another suspected murder that was connected with him. In October 1994, severed human hands were found near the New Malones Reservoir. On December 13th, 94, a headless and handless torso was found in a cluster of trees near Vallecito, California, by a group of boys who were burning yard rubbish. A forensic pathologist determined that the detached hands belonged to the body. In December 1995, the remains were identified as belonging to 24-year-old Sherilyn Mavon Murphy. Her head was never found. The FBI investigated Murphy's homicide to determine a link between Stainer due to the similarities in her death and that of Jerry Armstrong, because she was decapitated as well. Authorities also reviewed the case of 34-year-old Denise Smith, whose decomposed body was discovered in a 50-gallon burn barrel off Jacksonville Road near the Don Pedro Reservoir in December 1994.
This guy is, if it is him, why has he not been stopped?
I know. 20-year-old Michael Larry Madden planned to meet friends at Sandbar Flat Campground in the Stanislaus National Forest near Sonora, California, on August 10th, 1996, for camping and fishing. On that day, he left his family's home at around 5 a.m. and he was never seen again. At 2 a.m. on August 12th, 1996, Madden's friends showed up at the arranged spot, but they found no sign of him. Authorities have considered that Madden may have been one of Stainer's victims, who was operating around 75 miles away. Stainer was tried in federal court for Armstrong's murder, and to avoid a death sentence, he pled guilty to premeditated first-degree murder, felony first-degree murder, kidnapping resulting in death, and attempted aggravated sexual abuse resulting in death. During the sentencing hearing, Stainer suddenly broke down in tears and apologised, saying, quote, "I wish I could take it back, but I can't. I wish I could tell you why I did such a thing, but I don't even know myself. I'm so sorry. I wish there was a reason, but there isn't. It's senseless." Stainer was sentenced to life in prison without parole for the murder of Jerry Armstrong. He pled not guilty by reason of insanity to the other murders, and he also admitted that he had intended to murder two Finnish girls in 1998, but fled when someone else arrived. His lawyer claimed that the Stainer family had a history of sexual abuse and mental illness, showing not only in Stainer's murders, but also in the fact that Stainer had requested child pornography in exchange for his confession. Dr. Jose Arturo Silva...
Yeah,
you're not getting that, mate. Dr. Jose Arturo Silva testified that Stainer had obsessive-compulsive disorder, mild autism and paraphilia.
Mild autism, though.
Apparently. He was nevertheless found sane and convicted of three counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances and one count of kidnapping by a jury on August the 27th, 2002. Stainer was sentenced to death for the brutal murders and still remains on death row in San Quentin, age 61.
Really?
Though there have been no executions in California since a 2006 court ruling. He's probably just going to die there.
So he didn't go down for all the murders he'd done then?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay.
He got life for all of them.
Yeah, okay.
Delbert Stainer passed away in 2013, age 79, and Kay Stainer lives a private life in California.
All right, blimey.
I don't blame her, but she's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, definitely, because I ain't going on with that family, really, though. Like, it's just very weird.
Such a lot, isn't it?
Mm.
Imagine being their parents.
Wow.
How much trauma can one person manage?
That is a lot
manage?
For a family, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's a happy one today.
Yeah.
It's a quick one. It feels like a quick one, that one.
Yeah, even though it's quite a lot of information, kind of got through it. Yeah. I think we didn't really talk so much for a bit.
Well, it's not a straightforward serial killer story. It's like different things going on there. So it's not things we can pinpoint directly. It's quite a hard one, actually. It's almost like we need to be like Charlie and Sonny in Philadelphia with a crazy board with loads of string to start working out the family and what's going on and figure it out. Kind of would need to know more, though, info if you're really going to try and do that. You'd need to know mum and dad's background, grandparents.
Yeah, and there's just there's not really health, like...
That
information isn't out there, you know, so...
Children.
You're never going to find that.
No. Well, that's a weird one. Hmm. Well, what an unfortunate situation for people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And some horrible people too.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Strange
poor
story.
Kid. Poor Stephen kid there.
Yeah.
But he saved Timmy.
He did.
So well done for that. So I'm glad for that. Well, that was a bit of a bleaker, sadder one. Things like that. There's not many jokes I could start pulling out of the bag, really.
That's what
there?
I mean. I think that's why it's gone by a bit quicker, because it's not really very jokey, is it?
There's no blanking going on,
no,
definitely.
No, there isn't.
Next time, though, we're going to go, because, you know, we like to mix it up. Next time, though, we're going to do a little bit different. What are we doing?
We are. We're going to be talking about the Count of Saint Germain. So, yeah, we're going to be looking into that.
Okay, what?
Okay, French alchemist who apparently found the secret to immortal life.
I know the secret to immortal life.
Is it a Greg sausage roll?
I'm not telling you, it's a secret.
It's a cheese and pickled toastie.
I'm telling you.
That's what it is.
It's a secret.
Live forever.
Yeah.
Apparently he found the secret to immortality and was alive through centuries and was friends with like loads of really famous people throughout history and stuff.
Where is he now then?
I don't know.
Is
we'll find out together because I don't know the answer to that one.
Oh, interesting.
So,
we'll figure that one out.
We'll see what's going on with him. So an immortal French alchemist. There you go. That's what's coming up next time.
That's pretty cool. So that'll be episode 78.
Yep.
If you want to check out horror movie bits and bobs, just cover Child's Play 3 and 4, Bride of Chucky.
Yeah.
Go on to the podcast on Horde Hill with me and my buddy Dan, where we talk about horror movies and silly nonsense.
Yeah.
What else do you do?
I do stuff, don't I? I'm going to shut my Etsy shop today, but you can still come and have a look at my stuff on Facebook and Instagram at Fox's Fantastic Fabrications, where I crochet all my little horror dolls and whatnot. And
send you a private message. And,
you can message me up on there and you can buy things and stuff, Worldwide Post and all that shizness.
Yeah, totally.
And, also pimp a ghost hunt in if you're in the UK and you fancy doing something spooky. You can come along to a Ghost Hunt UK event. I think my next one isn't till April, I reckon. I'll be in Langard Fort, which is on the coast. Yeah, so I'll be down there sailing ghosts.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we'll go and have a look at that. But yeah, they run events all over the country, so if you fancy a night out looking
ghost
for some spooks,
sailor ghosts or ghost seamen.
Oh yeah, ghost seamen,
ghost blanket.
Ooh, best take some tissues.
I've been spelunked.
Oh my god. There's my two pimps.
Yeah, totally. And Deadbolt Media, or Deadbolt Films, as we are as a member of. Check out our YouTube channel, Deadbolt Films, where we make films.
Yeah.
Go check out horror movies, short movies. There's a Star Wars horror movie on there if you want to.
Have we still got videos on there? Have we got
no.
Our, no? Oh, okay.
Unfortunately not.
You can't come and look at us doing stuff then.
Actually, I'm kind of doing it. I think I might do it. I know it's a bit silly to do it, but episode 100, I might have finally actually have a Patreon page worked out. So I'm going to get a load of content on there. I'll put the videos on there.
Oh, okay.
Some other bits and bobs, and we'll actually sort of finally do that.
Okay, cool.
And say to people, if you'd like to just help us out, pay for just the monthly uploads and things, not much.
Nice.
But that'd be nice.
Okie dokes.
I thought about doing episode 100, there's no reason, just go 100 at that point, be like, you can tell we're dedicated, you know. Anyway, thanks very much for doing all the info.
Yeah, that's all right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Definitely look under the bed for dodgy men.
Just watch who you're talking to when you're walking home from...
Yeah.
I was going to say school, but if you're walking home from school, you probably shouldn't be listening
to this podcast. And if you are, at least you know what to do.
Just watch out for dodgy men trying to get you to get in their car. Coming windmilling.
Yeah, yeah.
I recommend a throat punch.
Absolutely. Anyway.
episode suggestions as well. If anyone's got one, you can get in touch with us on the Facebook page or the Instagram thing. Send us a message.
Yeah,
we do like episode suggestions. And if you feel so inclined and you've got a second, come along and fill up our stars on Spotify, please. And thank you.
A rate and review. And speaking of throw punching, Steven's movie we watched earlier on, Deadly Ground with Steven Seagal, punched a man, put his hand through a window and punched him in the throat. Apparently knocked the man out for 3 minutes.
Oh, really?
He went unconscious, and Steven Seagal thought he looked so good, he cut the rest of the man's scenes out and pretended that he died there and then.
Holy shit. Oh, my God. Steven Seagal, such a tit.
Seagal trivia. And that's the Seagal podcast. Come again for the next one. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.